Southwest Fire Academy was established in 2015 as a response to the recognized need for quality, safe, and affordable fire and rescue training in Ontario. This is not your average fire college. SFA has high standards for their students, and it is their mission to teach and produce qualified, ambitious firefighters who are prepared to work hard to serve their communities. This is not a diploma mill. This is where you can learn strategic, aggressive firefighting from passionate, intelligent instructors who never forget why they were made to do this job. SFA is an accredited private career college that is regulated by the Ministry of Training, colleges, and universities, with a memorandum of understanding with the Office of the Fire Marshal. This means that SFA is an approved training provider with the OFM, and the programs are recognized in Ontario. Check out the pre-service and expanding selection of course offerings at southwestfireacademy.com. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 84 of Multiple Calls. I'm Scott Hewlett. It's easy to understand how getting out of your comfort zone leads to growth, but we shouldn't discount the role of playing to our strengths and helping maintain stability and confidence while we push ourselves in new directions. It's the closed-mindedness of saying always or never that keeps us stuck. Even within the same discipline, we can balance comfort and challenge. We can enjoy teaching something we know well, while keeping ourselves humble and improving by tackling new topics. The ease and flow of riding a trail we have memorized is a calming meditative experience, which can be bookended with the exhilaration of tackling more difficult or new terrain. Comfort is the enemy of growth if it's unending. Perpetual discomfort can be just as damaging and limiting. Respecting and enjoying the necessity of both in our lives is the key. Here's my chat with Lexis Ross.
Kick things off by telling me where you grew up and tell me about your family.
Kind of like a long, convoluted story. My whole family's from Ontario, but my mom and dad moved out to BC when they were young. They had me and my two older sisters. So I was born and raised in a 4,000 people town in British Columbia. My parents split up when I was really, really young, a baby. So did 1 week on, 1 week off for most of my childhood. I was one of three people in my grade, I believe. It was one of those tiny, tiny towns. So it was split up into 4, 5, 6 split classes, 3 grades, 1 teacher, and only 20 students. So it was super different from where I am now. It's funny to look back on and kind of reflect. I think I was 8 years old and I played on a adult soccer team because that's kind of all we had in our town. And that's just what we did.
Yeah, real community feel.
Yeah, for sure. Middle of nowhere. My house is in the woods. It was a 45-minute bus ride to school. We had a kilometer-long driveway. My dad is still out there, but my mom moved back here kind of in my mid-adolescence. And then we ended up moving here. I think I was 12 when I moved here, and I finished off middle school and then high school here.
Right. And how was the transition from being where you were to being in Hamilton?
Terrible. No, it's funny because the town that I grew up in, it was minus 40. You wore clothes to keep yourself warm. We were all farm kids, so you wore farm clothes to school, and no one really cared because you just you wore what you needed to wear to get through the day. And I think I was wearing cut off sweatpants and some band t-shirt to my first day of school here. And the guy that I was sitting beside, we ended up becoming buddies, but he was like, "Oh my God, the new girl's so weird." What? And I ended up being "Oh my gosh, I mom, you could have given me a heads up. People don't dress like that out here. What are we doing?" It was a tough transition for sure, but how things go, I kind of fumbled my way in pretty easily. And I've always been super sporty and active, so just going a couple sports teams and things kind of leveled out pretty quickly.
Sure. How was school for you?
I was always pretty good at school. My mom is super academic, so we always kind of wanted to be like her, me and my older sisters. So school always came pretty naturally. I've always been a super hard studier, nothing below A's until I got to university. But yeah, it came pretty easily to me, it made things easier for sure.
You said your school was on a First Nations reserve, but was that before you came back?
It's been renamed. I don't know what it's called now. It's got the native language of my hometown was Gitxsan. And we actually had to take Gitxsan lessons in school because our school was on a reserve. super, super interesting. Like, that was just life for me growing up. But then I came here and it's so, so different. But yeah, our school was on a reserve and we had like a band that brought in food and everything and lunches for the kids that were from reserves and like for the Gitxaan kids. The few of us that were not, that came from the farms in the outskirts, definitely stuck out like sore thumbs. But that school actually had French immersion. When I look back on it now, it seems kind of crazy for a town that small to have French immersion. But yeah, we had French immersion. So I took that while I was like throughout all of school. I took it all the way up until the end of high school. It's definitely an interesting dynamic. Like, it's really interesting to be in today's society, especially now. I work and I live in Burlington. I grew up as a minority in my town. And then coming here, like, it's very stark difference. But it definitely, like, gave me a lot of experience and, like, cultural appreciation for all the differences, which is super cool.
What about sports back there and then when you moved here?
Our schools were good. Like, again, I'm shocked to think about it now and go back. But like, we had everything. I played soccer, played baseball, volleyball. Like, we did everything. Obviously, just like in the schools, I never played rep anything. I forced my parents to put me in gymnastics when I think I was like 7 or 8, but it was like an hour drive away to the next town. And it was 3 days a week. And I kind of just like, I did a lot of saving when I was young, like with allowance and stuff. And I was like, I'll buy my own like classes. Obviously, I couldn't afford them, but I thought I could at the time. So they let me do that, which was super, super cool and like definitely not easy to do. Like, looking back, obviously my family had to make sacrifices for it and I got a lot of rides and stuff places, but I ended up being a provincial level gymnast from that out in BC when I was just a small wee thing, and then came over here to Ontario when I was just like 12 or 13. I think I was turning 13 and I grew pretty fast and I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the Olympics for gymnastics. And that dream got crushed pretty quickly. And I went from like 4'4" to 5'2" over the course of the summer. So it was like, oh no. We did everything. I have two older sisters. So like I said, like we played in the town leagues of soccer all the time. And like, it was such a community living that like, we never were stuck anywhere because like, we just get like one of the other kids from like the valley is going to drive by and pick us up, or we'll stay with so-and-so for the weekend. And like, it was like all fine. So we were able to do a lot of that stuff. And then obviously when we moved over here, the opportunities were just way closer and endless. So like, ended up going on, like my oldest sister went and played for the Ontario soccer team for a summer or two. And then I went off and I did competitive gymnastics, and my other sister, they both went off and did like competitive Taekwondo as well. And we had all that. Yeah, we even had a school, like one of the other schools in my hometown offered Taekwondo lessons. And so my dad put his three daughters in Taekwondo and said we weren't allowed to date any boys until we got that done. So we all got our black belt in Taekwondo too.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we've always been like super outgoing athletic family in that sense.
Has any of that stuck with you, the Taekwondo?
I turned, I think 11 or 12, I got it and I was like, I got it, Dad. I did what you told me to do. My two older sisters did, though. They went, one of them competed in Calgary for it, and the other one, they both stuck with it when they moved here for a little bit, for a few years, and they really liked it. But I was always kind of forced to go for me. But it's fun now, and I think about like defense and stuff, and it's super important, especially for girls. So I don't blame them.
You haven't got into jiu-jitsu at all?
You know what? That's funny that you say that, because one of my friends in fire has been dying to get me on a mat. And I don't know. I'm not very like aggressive that way. Like, I don't know if I would be good at it, but I'm big and strong. She's like, you'd crush it. But I know it's definitely the thing to do. I have a lot of friends that do it. Do you do it?
I've been introduced to it here and there. Just like anything, it's time and money, right?
Exactly. And commitment.
And injuries.
Yes. Yeah.
It's quite injury prone.
Yeah, it's a brutal one, but it does look like fun.
You're pretty outdoorsy as a family?
My dad is, I guess, entrepreneur, but he was like a tree planter, a tree faller, extraordinaire when we were kids. So like, he would often take us with him to jobs, and my two older sisters would work with him just because it's like a way for him to plant more trees and for them to make money. So it was great. So we would all always be there hanging around outside, and then my dad would often take us camping and stuff, and he's just like always been super naturey. So we used to do 8 kilometer canoe paddles into a portage out to a background campsite that he would find, and like go fishing and hiking, and we were always outside. Like, if we ever had a day off where we were home, not at school or not doing something, we would just be outside. We'd like have breakfast and then get out the door. The door shuts behind us and we would come back to lunch. So my sisters and I would go explore. We had like a huge property in BC, and it's funny to think about now, didn't run into more wildlife issues, but the three of us would run off into the woods and kind of like throw sticks at each other and stuff. I only had one like bear encounter when I was on my way down the kilometer long driveway to school one morning. I ran into very close to a bear with three cubs and ended up not catching the bus because I got scared and I ran back to the house. And
black bear?
Yeah, it was a black bear and three cubs. It was funny because I was always on time for the bus. I never missed the bus. So I was always first down the driveway, and then I remember sprinting back up and my sister's like, "We're going to miss the bus. We have to go." And I'm like, "We can't go that way. There's bears."
That's like the BC version of the dog ate my homework, right?
Yeah, literally. But it's funny because out there it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. We're like, oh, Ross girls are late because
I ran into a bear.
Yeah. Driveway. Literally. Yeah, so we've always been super outdoorsy, like just in general. We still go, my sisters and I, and we dragged my half-brother is 8 years younger than us. He was born and raised here. He was born in BC, but pretty much raised here. We dragged him out to a backcountry camping trip with us this year, and he hated it until we got there, and then he started fishing and stuff, and he's like, oh, this is kind of cool. Yeah, it's not so fun carrying a canoe through the woods, but it's better when you get there.
It's delayed gratification.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's in for next year. So
nice. What about role models and guides and mentors along the way?
Growing up in a small town, like definitely, again, stark differences from there to now living, and especially like the other people that I grew up with once I moved here, they had a lot more exposure. We really didn't, like, we didn't have TV. We had minimal, like, big stories from my hometown. There's so little people. We had a wrestler that made it to the Olympics and won a gold, Carolyn Wynn. She was a big talk in our town. I didn't know her, and I had no passion for wrestling, but I was, that was kind of neat. It wasn't until I like started doing gymnastics and I found some like really amazing women like gymnasts, and I was like, oh, those were kind of like role models-esque in terms of like sport. I always wanted to be like high level sport when I was young. Like I really did think I was going to go to the Olympics. It's funny looking back now and looking at the 12-year-olds that are going through Olympic or through gymnastics now, not close. But in terms of like athletic role models, I definitely looked like in that direction. And then as I got a little older, I did competitive rowing, and there was like some really big figures. Silken Lahman is the big figure in rowing. And I like latched onto that hard for a lot of my younger adulthood. Just like her story and the tenacity and all that was like super big for me. And then in terms of like day to day, my oldest sister, Veronica, has always been like, just like since I was little, like the thing to do. And like, obviously you grow up and you learn things about people. They're just people as you go. And like, that's changed a lot. But I was joking around with her the other day, cause I was like, you would play the game of like, Lexi, I'll time you. See how fast you can get my backpack. And I would friggin' run. Like, my life depended on it. Like, I was like, oh, it's anything for her. She was awesome. Like, growing up, I definitely, and my middle sister, Cassidy, too. But her and I were really close in terms of, like, being almost just, like, best friends. So it wasn't quite the same. But, yeah, like, the three of us, divorced child life is never easy. And we did a lot of traveling back and forth from BC to Ontario when my mom moved. And they got separated. I must have been really young, but so like from age 3 to whatever, 7, 8, we would travel back and forth. When we were younger, we would go like 1 week on, 1 week off. And then when we got older and she moved to Ontario, which I was like 9, 8 or 9, we would do like fly there for the summer and then fly back. And obviously we're flying alone. So my sisters and I kind of became just like the band of bandits. So in terms of like life and growing up, those two, like in terms of like pointing me in the right direction and like keeping me honest and doing the right thing, those two were definitely like, and still to this day, are the people that I lean on and the people I want to make most proud in my life.
Did you head off to university?
Yeah, I went to Queens. I ended up going out to Queens for my undergrad in nursing.
And why'd you pick that?
My oldest sister's a nurse. So yeah, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I did not know what I wanted to be when I grew up, but everybody tells you that you need to have a job coming out of school. And I was like, well, what the heck? Can't get a job with just a degree and nothing. So I kind of was like, oh, I'm really good at science and I like helping people. And it kind of just came easy to me. And my oldest sister did it. She's like, yeah, it's easy. You have a job for life and then you can decide. And I was like, okay, great. So I just kind of took off and did it and it went well and I liked it. So, I mean, now I'm a firefighter. So,
what areas of the hospital did you work in?
I started off in Emerge 3 or 4 months there just for my placement with school. I really liked it. I thought I wanted to stay in Emerge, but I ended up going to trauma and neurosurgery for 2 years. And I absolutely loved it. It was like super cool, super high pace, lots of learning and lots of autonomy on the job. And I really enjoyed it, but it was pretty brutal for burnout. So I ended up switching after a couple of years to a private health clinic where I did like your regular doctor's office nursing. I did a lot of reporting and your day-to-day stuff, which was super switch from the hospital.
The whole other side of the spectrum.
Yeah, but it was funny because it was like the hospital, you do all this crazy, crazy cool stuff. And then I switched over to a clinic and I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. But it was all this stuff that I had never done that was super simple, but like unknown, like, oh, when to get your scans done, when to get your x-rays done. And I was like, oh, this is... So I learned a lot there too, but it obviously it didn't fill the like void of needing to be constantly challenged for me. And then COVID hit. So I was like, I kind of had an opportunity where I got to work from home and kind of switch my role a little bit. And then I had so many people at the time I was doing CrossFit be like, why aren't you doing firefighting? It's like nursing and CrossFit combined. Like you need to do it. I was like, ah, all right, like whatever, I'll just do it. And I was living in Toronto at the time. That's where I did the trauma nursing and everything. And I was like, okay, like COVID moved me back home to Hamilton where I am now. And I was like, well, there's a volunteer station around the corner. I'll just apply. Like I have no idea. I'll try volunteer and then we'll go from there. And then long story short, I got on right away with volunteer and the Hamilton volunteer process was so amazing. And I was hooked. I was like, oh, this is it. This is what I want to do. And then within like 6 months of being on volunteer, I got hired on full time, which is very nice. And I'm very fortunate. I kind of hit a lot of the boxes that they needed. So I was very fortunate. I got on really quickly. But
did you have exposure to firefighters at all in Emerge when they were bringing, did they come in with patients ever or was it mostly medics?
I never saw any firefighters. Now that I think about it, lots of police and all the medics, but
just sometimes we end up traveling with them, right?
Yeah. I've gone a couple times now that I think about it. And I know I've never seen them. Yeah. But that would have been funny to kind of come full circle. But yeah, no, I never didn't see any firefighters in the Emerge.
When did you start into CrossFit?
I think we're about 7 years ago now, probably like 2018, I think I started. I graduated university and I didn't, like, there's no organization for adults to go into sports after you're done. I remember being very lost and being like, what do people do? Like guys have hockey leagues and there's house soccer teams and stuff. But I kind of, I did competitive rowing in university and there's adult rowing and stuff in Hamilton, but I didn't really have anything in Toronto. It was very weird. So I had this like weird year where I just kind of like ran a lot. I think I did the Around the Bay. I didn't know what else to do. And then I fell into CrossFit shortly after graduating university and kind of got the bug and I've been hooked ever since.
And you said you were coaching. Did you do competitive at all either?
It was one of those things, kind of like fire. I got addicted to it right away. I got my like teaching certifications right away and I started coaching in Toronto just like as an addition to my main income. It was more just for the love of the sport. So I did that for a while, got good enough that I've traveled a bit for it. I went to Miami a couple times to compete at a competition called Wodapalooza, which is a ton of fun. I do the Open every year, which is like the big CrossFit worldwide test of fitness. So I do that every year with my gym. I did a couple competitions this year. I went down to Texas to help run a competition. I'm kind of involved a lot still on that side of things, but I don't actually do a ton of CrossFit anymore. I mostly just do Olympic weightlifting. It's true that the sport is pretty abusive if you go for it full throttle. So I just found that I was getting hurt more than I was wanting to. And
it's just a volume, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And if you want to go far in the sport, you got to do it. So I had to make a decision, but weightlifting is definitely happier to my body and it's way more fun. I really enjoy it. So I'm going to Nationals for weightlifting in May of next year.
So did CrossFit introduce you to Olympic lifting? Is that how that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm pretty fortunate. The gym that I ended up at in Burlington here, it's called CrossFit Connection and it's like rare gym where we have elite level everything. So we have CrossFitters at our gym that go to the CrossFit Games. We have strongman people that one of the strongman girl at our gym won the Arnold Classic last year. And then we also have Olympic weightlifting. I think we have six of us going to nationals this year. And then we also have powerlifting. And those guys, we also have Canadian records. So our gym is just kind of this like incredible space. So I learned about Olympic weightlifting through our gym, but definitely came through CrossFit, which is a cool opportunity for sure.
Have you always been dialed in with sports nutrition since you were doing sports as a kid, or when did that sort of dial in for you?
Yeah, the nutrition side of things was never like a question, just because we were such active kids, obviously. And we, like my dad and my mom were both super like kind of eat off the land people. Like we had gardens and we hunted every year and stuff. So we've always just ate really well. That hit pretty hard when I had to buy my own groceries at Queens and I realized what that meant. Yeah, I didn't really even think about it until I remember starting CrossFit and being like, oh, it's going to make me just like shredded. Like, cause all these guys are just like, they're totally cut and shredded. And then I did it for 3 years and I was like, what the hell? Why is it happening for me? I realized that nutrition is important. I've worked with, I think, one or two different nutrition coaches, learned a lot, and I do it all myself now. I needed it once I became an adult. When I was a kid, I didn't need it at all. You know, I remember like eating pounds of sugar with my best friends at night, watching movies and stuff, and can't do that now. Pretty dialed in now. Like the sport that I'm in for Olympic weightlifting is there's weight categories. So I'm not super strict. Obviously, like at the fire hall, we don't always eat the best. We try to, but
speaking of volume again.
Yeah, exactly. Volume, and people are very kind and they bring us lots of treats. So
it's always available. What events are you doing for weightlifting?
I just did provincials last month. So nationals will be in May. We'll have a couple, I think we have another elite competition in March that we're going to be hosting. And then I'll just be doing some like random club meets here and there just to kind of prepare. But yeah, the big one was provincials. That was out in Toronto last month. And then in May, the one for nationals will be out east in Halifax.
Right on. And what lifts do you focus on?
It's just snatching and clean and jerk. I thought it was boring when I first heard of it. I was like, who would ever want to do that? But I'm hooked now. It's so much fun. And you get to sit down between rests, which is what I love.
Yeah. Go hard, go sit down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's perfect. It's great.
So you're volunteering. What was the onboarding like for that? What was the experience like? And then maybe walk me through the process of getting on full time and how that was.
With Hamilton, like their program is, I found out like as I was coming on that it was pretty high level. And after doing it, I totally agree. And I've done an onboarding full time as well. And it's just like, it's such a good program. They do a really good job of introducing you to not only like what firefighting is, because volunteers usually have nothing, no experience, no background, right? So what firefighting is, how to do it safely, da 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 da, but also hierarchy and command and chain of command and how important all of that is and respect for authority and your placement, da 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 da. So that was like a really great introduction to like the world of firefighting, not just the actual job itself, but then to the actual job itself. It was just awesome. Like I think it was 14 weeks and we did every other weekend. No, it was definitely more than that. 5 or 6 months. I can't remember, but it was every other weekend. Ended up being 12 weeks every other weekend. We would go in for 8-hour days and they'd take us through medical. And then we did everything extensively through fire training, like from car fire props to full auto X to full house fires, multiple rooms on fire, da 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 da. I got as fit as I've ever been that summer because we were just running scenarios all the time. And it just kind of like made me fall in love with this super high level. It is kind of like CrossFit meets nursing, where every scenario could have medical involved and every scenario could have fire and every scenario could have this and that. And it's chaos and you never know what you have to do and you have to pivot. And in those scenarios, I personally find that I thrive when there's a gambit of things and you have to prioritize what's first, what's second, and what to do. And then I'm a big fan of just following orders and lifting heavy shit, which is kind of the motto. For me, it was just like, it was super easy to do that. But it made me develop like a huge appreciation for it and super, super passion for it. So I ended up getting on and kind of deciding right away, like, while I'm still working from home, I might as well give it a shot. The onboarding process for full-time sucks. Like anyone will say, you know, there's all these different tests around Ontario, at least. I've heard it's the same out in BC and everything too. So different tests you have to pay for different cities, different requirements, yada, yada, yada. Again, I was pretty fortunate that I have my nursing degree, so I didn't have to worry about too much of the like first aid side of things, EMR side of things. I had that background, which was like a super nice bonus. But then all those other tests, I just, someone that just does things 110%. So basically I got this passion and drive to do it. And I did everything. I did every test from Sarnia all the way to Quebec, basically, like that I could. And I just kind of dialed in and got a coach, and I had incredibly grateful opportunity that I got interviews for, I think, every single city I applied for. It was cool, and I got to dip my feet in the water and ended up having a choice and got super, super fortunate that way. And then I got on with Burlington, and it was all kind of like a whirlwind. It still feels very like imposter syndrome-y. I've been on the job for like coming up on 2 years now, full time, and it still feels it's the first time I've been on, and it's just like it's all so much to learn, so much to do, and I'm like definitely not comfortable.
Well, it doesn't matter how long you're on. If you're into it, you're never quite fully comfortable, but you are. It's a strange mix. It comes and goes.
Yeah, for sure. And some days you feel like a rock star, and then other days you feel like, what the heck am I doing here?
For most of us, I don't think that ever goes away.
Yeah. So I've been told it's a good feeling to have.
It keeps
so
you honest. It keeps you honest.
Well, and if I don't, the boys sure make sure that I do.
Have you had any struggles settling into the culture?
It's funny because I came from like a family of three girls, and then my brother came later, but most girls. And then I did nursing school, which we had two boys in my class of 100. I have mostly been in jobs that are female dominated because of being a nurse and all that. So coming into fire was definitely different. It took a lot of getting used to. I am very fortunate that I adore everyone that I work with. I've had no issues, nothing even that I could write down that I could think of that make me upset to even think about it the next day. But lots of times where the joking and stuff, I just am someone, I take things to heart. And I take things, if I'm being criticized, I want to change them and I want to improve. And so I take it personally in a way that I want for my own self-improvement. And I quickly realized you can't take everything that way because it's a long career if you do. And so definitely had my fair share of pretending everything's fine and having little breakdowns in the washroom when I started. But now they all say it's tough skin, but it's not so much that it's full of tough love or anything like that. It's just something happens, you deal with it and you move on. Which I don't think is something that I commonly did in my culture before doing fire. It was a lot of things that I held on to and I carried forward and stuff. And since being on with kind of male dominated industry, I've found that it's easy to just let something go. Like something happens, if it's not important, you let it go and you kind of move on, which is super cool. It's definitely like transferred over to life, and it makes life more enjoyable.
Have you found it important, though, to link up with other female firefighters, is just to have that common ground?
I'm fortunate that I have a couple other females that I work with in Burlington that are both super on the same level as me. And I don't know if it's like that for every city where the like females that are in the industry are kind of similar. I feel like, yes, like if you're in this profession, you got to have some similarities, right? We all kind of know what we're doing. It's not like an everyday job for females. So I'm close with a couple of them, and I'm super fortunate to have just at least, when it gets overwhelming, to have someone to be like, don't you hate when this happens? Yes. Oh, so dumb. You're like, it is dumb. And then again, you can laugh about it and move on, and it doesn't impact anyone. But since I've been on, actually, and since I've progressed, it's more and more that I find I don't need that affirmation, which is kind of cool in itself. And I'm super fortunate that I have two older sisters that I talk to every day. So I have that closeness with other females that I can vent my day away to. But I really don't find, and again, I can't speak for every city, but I don't find that I'm the odd one out in my hall. Like I am the only girl on my shift, but the guys are just like family. I don't think that I'm any different as I stand around on the job, on the fire ground. I don't feel any different. I feel like I'm respected just as much as any other guy that's out there. And I have a lot of pressure on myself that I put on myself to be just as good, if not better, than any other guy that's out there. So I think that for some people, it might be harder to do that. I'm just someone that's always kind of, I've always done that. I've always needed to prove that I'm capable, and if not more capable. But the culture has not made me feel like any less than in any way, which is amazing.
How is it going from the controlled environment pre-hospital and doing medical work, and then say transitioning to what it's like in the field and at car accidents and just an uncontrolled situation? Is like, talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I remember my first call that was kind of gruesome. There was a femur fracture and some pretty heavy bleeding. I was like, oh, like, we need these supplies. And I was, we don't have those supplies. Like, this is what you got. You got to make do with what you got. It's super interesting. It makes you think and it makes you narrow things down like to a little more basic, which I think is cool. It's not so much like a Band-Aid and then send it off, but it kind of is. Like, how can we fix this right now to get them to where they need to go to for a long-term solution? Where I felt like when I was in the hospital, I was the long-term solution. I had to do the things to like get them out of the hospital, which is a lot more than just to get them to the hospital. It's super interesting. I also found it super difficult to transition from being a nurse to a firefighter, especially on those medical calls, because my level of nursing is at par with the EMS, if not higher, in some scenarios. So to go from where's my scope and how do I use it properly was tricky. I got a hold of it pretty quickly. I don't have any issues with it now. It's super easy for me to hand off a patient to EMS or help the EMS in ways that I can. But I know that we have some people that are paramedics on the side too. And it's awesome to have on the job, because even like someone fainting, there's other questions that a medical brain might go to that can super help a situation, sometimes with just basic EMR training, or it's fine, but it's just an addition. Like, it's just a helpful addition to have. I like that I have that background. It's definitely helpful on the scene for sure.
Do you guys do symptom relief or symptom assist?
I think that all that we have is Epi and Narcan. I think there's talk about getting ventilator assistance drugs, but I don't think that's anywhere confirmed. It's tricky because we're so close with EMS, right? That it's where do the leeways go to first and kind of what we can help with. But yeah, so we just do Narcan and Epi right now. I actually haven't had to use either of those yet.
We do symptom assist for Ventolin and ASA and Nitro, if they have their own, right? It's assisting them with their own meds.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't run into any of those situations yet.
Or I guess it would be, there have been moments where I was, before we had it even, where I was working as a medic, and it was frustrating that, well, I could be giving this patient Ventolin right now and they need it and I can't, and where the clock is ticking and the medics are, they happen to be busy and they're taking a while. It was frustrating to know what to do and you wish you had it with you.
Yeah, it sucks when you can see things happening and you know how to make things better, but you're not allowed to do it. But there's rules and things like that for a reason, right? So it's definitely tough.
Yeah, a number of us that were medics years ago, we also were approaching it for tech rescue, right? So trench rescue call or confined space or a high angle where the medics can't get to. What about those cases where the patient's going to be where they're at? It's going to take some time to get them out. So why can't we then cross train and be firefighter medics and at least tech rescue in the tech rescue situation, right?
Absolutely. That would be phenomenal. Well, and I know, like, take a look at our fellow firefighters down in the States, right? They all, if not most, if not all of them, are laterally trained that way, just for that reason.
Yeah, in some departments, they have to start out as medics. You've had to finish medic school first and then transition into fire.
I personally think that that's awesome. Like, I would love to see that happen here, or if not, like, some kind of bridge between the two. Like, you know, down in the States, like, they have mixed halls where they have a hall with, well, we have them here. Like, we have halls where we share with an ambulance, but there's no literal crossover, right?
Yeah,
like,
there's a shared building, but there's a wall and you don't
interact. Exactly. Right. You can't be on the engine one day and then on the ambulance the next day.
Have you thought about going back to school and getting your paramedic and then working part-time?
I have. I definitely have. Got a couple buddies on my shift that are paramedics. It's tough. One of the guys has kids and his life is pretty chaotic, and having kids and then working the side. But he said he'll never get rid of it. Like, he'll never lose his ALS license because it's just like, it's awesome. It's awesome side job, and it's awesome to learn more every day when you're not at work. Right, right now, I still am working as a nurse. I do I do Botox and fillers on the side, which is kind of funny. It's another huge pivot, but it was just kind of landed in my lap. So I do that on the side right now. I have no intention of losing my nursing license because it was a hell of a time to get, and I still really enjoy it. Ideally, when I was working in trauma, I really wanted to do orange nursing. That was where I thought I was going to go. But it was like, well, if you want to do that, it's 4 years in the ICU, and then it's 5 more years in eMERGE, and then it's, and I was like, oh, I'm not just going to waste years training. Like, I want to keep going forward. So I didn't end up doing that. But if I could, in some capacity, get back to like some type of clinical setting in a nursing capacity, I definitely would, just because I really enjoy that kind of chaotic thing. But It's tough because in those settings, it's either only full time or it's got to have extra training and da 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 da. And again, they don't usually want casual or part time nurses for those roles, which is understandable. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a chaser of knowledge, so I wouldn't be surprised if next year you and I chatted and I was like, oh yeah, I went back, I got my EMS license.
So for those that don't know, Orange would be flight medic.
Yes, it would have been cool. Like I love hearing stories about, like, we've got some buddies that do it, and it's incredible. Would have definitely been something I wanted to do, but now I love this too much to leave.
Are there aspects of the job that you're falling in love with quickly, like say AutoX or either?
I get a lot of crap from it from the guys, but I love survival. It's so funny because it's not something that, like, everybody likes. A lot of people like to give it a lot of heck because I don't know what it's like out there in terms of specialties, but for us, we do everything. We don't have trench, but we have rope and we have water writ and everything. We don't have confined space either. We do have to train and everything. So they always give me a hard time. So I'm like, I love writ. And they're like, nobody likes writ. Love it. I really enjoy survival training a lot. I would love to go. Like, the States have some pretty neat competitions for it. And sometimes we send people down. So if I do dive into anything, I think I'll probably go in that direction right now. But again, I'm still so new that I kind of sink my teeth into anything. I've been fortunate, well, non-fortunate, but had the opportunity to go into Lake Ontario for a couple of lake rescues. And I really like that as well. Again, I have so much passion for every aspect of the job right now. It's tough. The least of my passion is in ropes, just because it doesn't click very well in my brain. But that just means I have to do it more.
Well, don't let anybody dissuade you from RIT, because those that know that RIT is that's the culmination of everything, right? When things are the worst, so.
You get it.
I get it, yeah. It's the high risk, low volume, right?
Yes, it's exactly. That's the square I like the most. Yeah, for sure. If I have the opportunity, I'll dig that way a little bit.
Do you guys have fifth class where you start at, or do you start at fourth?
So we start at Proby for the first X amount, and then you go into fourth class. So technically, I guess you're starting fifth. Yeah, so I'm fourth right now. Going to be third here soon, and then standard up to one, and then.
Do you guys move around a lot as rookies, or do they keep you where you're at?
It depends, like, what the platoons are. So my platoon was pretty well staffed, so I didn't. I'm at headquarters still, and I'm staying there as far as I know. But I know a couple of my buddies have moved around a little bit just because of captain promotions and et cetera. They try to move us around as much as they can, if possible, just to get a feel for the different areas of the city when we're new. Just because of the way things worked out with my platoon and changes and yada yada, I ended up staying. But I'm okay with it. Like, our headquarters is a 3-truck haul. We've got a rescue, an engine, and an aerial. And we're very busy for the most part. So, and we do everything, like anything that happens in the city we go to, depending on what truck you're on, that's big. So been lucky enough to have my fair share of fires from the tip of the aerial, as well as inside the building from the engine, as well as rescues from in the water from the rescue, all the way up to like rope rescues and stuff like that. So I definitely like where I am right now and hope to stay for a little longer, at least to get more exposure.
Are you bringing any thought to linking up your fitness with the fire industry? Like, you're going to go to the firefighter games, or have you brought CrossFit into the station, or are there people there that already do it? So how's that integrating?
I've tried to bring CrossFit to the station. I'm sure you know how I get met with that in terms of comments. I did actually manage to get one of the guys from my hall into my gym, but doing strongman, which is fine. I don't do CrossFit, I do weightlifting anyway. So I did do a trial for FireFit last year or the year before. I smashed it. I had a lot of fun, but I honestly just haven't had time to commit to going and training. I know a few guys in Hamilton that are very, very into it and go and compete all the time. I would like to. I just haven't. I'm kind of leaning towards weightlifting and committing myself that way a little bit more. But once I kind of balance things out, I would definitely like to merge the two of them together. But they look like a ton of fun. And from what I've heard, it is like the riot of a time doing those competitions.
Is there weightlifting in the firefighter games? I imagine there would be.
I think so. I think it's more like fitness geared. I don't think that there's... I went and I looked, because I had a couple of buddies go to the firefighter police games this year. She went for police for weightlifting, but they do more like powerlifting. So it was just kind of like bench and deadlift and squat. I didn't see anything this year for the snatch and clean and jerk. If it does come up, I'm there in a heartbeat. That's something that I might look into for 2024. But I know that they have a CrossFit section. We'll see. If I get someone in my crew and or in my like hall that will come, I definitely will go. I don't know. No full commitment on that yet.
And what about physical or mental struggles along the way, even through your athletic career? Have you had to work your way through any of those?
It's funny to talk about that. A lot of people, when you tell them stories, I'm sure you found the same, like inside of fire, you cope with it, how you cope with it. It's kind of an everyday thing. Like you'll see things from like a cat stuck in a tree. Yeah. All the way to like a super severe trauma situation. That wide scope, you never know what you're going to get, is definitely hard. And a lot of my friends outside of the industry are like, I could never, there's no way. And those are the most common things you hear, right? Not a chance. My oldest sister, who's a nurse, she was in the burn unit for a while. She was in the ICU for a while. So she's kind of, her and I are kind of on the same page when it comes to like managing that kind of thing. There hasn't been anything, again, knock on wood, that's kind of rocked me one way or the other too far yet. I've had my fair share of shitty calls, emotional for sure. Talking about it at all in any capacity is the least to do. Again, I'm super fortunate that my crew is phenomenal in that sense. We've had a couple pretty tough ones and they make sure to set aside time immediately. And whether like you need to be silent in that time or talking in that time or having people there while you sit and call your family in that time, we force that time to happen. I think that's like major. The one or two major ones that I've had, like I'm just speaking from experience, those were the things we did. And I think they mitigated a lot of potential of bringing it home. When you're able to get it out right away in some capacity, there's just kind of like a sense of togetherness and not so alone and taking it on your shoulders yourself when you go home, which is definitely big. We're pretty big promoters of mental health and seeking any type of counseling, whether it's preventative or otherwise. I definitely take advantage of that myself as much as I can and as much as I need to. And then I find that personally, I surround myself with people who are super, super empathetic. And I myself am just like that. So having just like even people that you don't need to talk to all the time about the things, but that can at least look at you and be like, oh, rough night, eh? Yeah, it was freaking terrible. It's all right. Like, let's do this or let's cancel this for now. And having like that kind of support in this profession, I think is super important because you can make plans for 9 a.m. after shift, and that's a great idea. But if you get hammered with calls all night and a really crappy one at 3 a.m., you got to have people in your life that are going to understand that you might not always be your best the day after work, or you might not always be your best the day before work because you got shit to do going into work. And I've definitely faced my fair share of crap, and I've definitely had my fair share of breakdowns. And like I said, little trips to the bathroom and have a quick cry before I get back onto the floor. I think allowing yourself to be weak in those moments is super important because if you don't, it's easy to have this job eat you alive, even if you're not doing crazy shit every day.
You guys have a pretty established peer support team too.
Yeah, it's great. We even have like an app. I think we have upwards of 16 people on our peer support team now too, like across the platoons. And we have a pretty beefy insurance package in terms of mental health, which is like, even compared to my nursing job, was outstanding. Like we didn't get any coverage from our nursing job. I think we had like $500 a year, which is crazy because I saw way more insane deaths on my trauma floor than I did so far in fire, but it's just a different culture.
Yeah. So you didn't have the benefits to support it, and you didn't have the culture to support it. Yeah. Talk to me about the difference between the culture in nursing that you saw versus fire. As far as that regard,
it's definitely different from my nursing eyes. It's 12-hour shifts. You run off your feet for 12 hours. You go home. You have 12 hours, and then you're back. Usually, right? That was my personal experience. Not a lot of time in that time frame, especially on the floors that I worked on, for downtime. Not a lot of time for chit chat and hanging out because you've got patients and they're there because they need 24-hour care, not 5-hour care, right? And fortunately enough, like we have time between calls where we can go, okay, well, right now in this moment, we can't prioritize training. We have to prioritize mental health. Having that ability to do that definitely was different. Nursing in a way quickly hardened me to the sense that like, okay, he might die today. She might die today. That bed's going to be filled in the next 30 minutes. So that person still needs your help. So it kind of desensitized me in that way of not so much mourning, but like taking on anything from that moment because you have to move on to the next moment. But again, for me personally, I was fortunate enough that I had an older sister that's a nurse. So if I had a shitty night where I had a couple of patients pass away on me, I was picking up my phone, calling my sister in the morning, going, she'd go, oh my God, yeah, you're telling me I had this and that. And it's like having that like normalcy of being able to like talk it through was super beneficial. On the floor, the culture was just like, you got to keep moving. There's people coming in, there's people going out, like there's doctors coming in for shifts, like things have to keep going. And that's not to say that the people that I worked with were bad people in any sense. It was just the nature of the job. We all kind of were that way. And the going into it, I remember them being like, yeah, we have a high turnover here. People leave quickly. And it's like, well, I see why. Like, this is terrible. It's not a 12-hour workday. It's a 14-hour workday because you're there an hour early so you can understand your patient caseload. And then you're there late because someone's having a crisis before you go. And you never know. You have some people that you're on the same rotation with, but like a lot of people vacation and booking, and it's very easy to not know who you're working with and not see who you're working with, because for the most part, you're honestly doing things by yourself as a nurse. You have four patients, you go and you do the things that need to happen for those four patients, and everyone else is doing the same thing. Whereas with fire, you're not doing anything alone. I don't do anything alone.
Yeah, unless you have a car accident and there's multiple cars and you guys have to split apart, but then usually other trucks are showing up. And so there may be moments that you're by yourself, but maybe not for long.
Exactly, yeah. And if they are, it's an immediate task where you're turning around and reporting back anyway. So I think like that sense of community and togetherness and teamwork is just, it's unparalleled. And I don't know any other job that has that. We just certainly don't work like, you know, you see paramedics that work together. But again, you never know what other paramedic you'll be on shift with even here. The nature of this job is just so different. So that having that sense of community makes the mental side of the job, yeah, at times difficult. It's a lot of time spent together. But for the most part, it's a source of support that's unparalleled.
Do you find the shift healthier sleep-wise?
Yeah, for sure. There's no chance I could go back to 12-hour shifts. Not after this. You can have good nights. Those are awesome. Great for the city, and it's great for you. Those shitty nights are those shitty nights, and hopefully they don't come too often. I'm sure some Toronto firefighters might have other things to say, but depends on where you work. But yeah, I love the 24-hour shifts, and we do crew meals for lunch and dinner every day. Again, it's just a huge sense of community. It's like working with your family every day.
Yeah, it surprises me that there's departments and crews that don't do it.
There's even some stations that we have out here that just their crew, they don't do it. I'm like, why wouldn't you want to do it?
Yeah, I think you're missing out huge by not doing that.
Yeah, well, and that's definitely a cultural, scientific stat somewhere, that having meals together and cooking with other people is like a form of community togetherness. So yeah, I love it.
Are you aware of conferences out there? Have any that caught your eye that you're interested in attending?
Not anything right away. I was invited to the female fire service one that just happened recently in Toronto, but I just had some family stuff come up, so I couldn't go. So I'm hoping to go next year. It is in Hamilton next year. That's on my radar for sure. I was fortunate enough through the weightlifting world to meet one of the like CEOs of the organization. So yeah, I definitely hope to go next year. And then we do have like a couple through our city that we send people to every year, but it's kind of seniority based. So I'm pretty low on the list right now, but I always put my name in. I'm always trying to get out there and do things like that. But yeah, my eyes right now are on the one in Hamilton coming up next year.
Yeah, I spoke at the one this year. They're a really great group.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I could have met you there.
I could have, yeah.
Yeah.
You'll see me there next year.
Perfect. That would be great. Yeah, I've helped in the past with the like Camp Blaze and the Camp Fire Fit, and I'll probably help with Camp Fire Fit again next year. I try to get involved in those as much as I can, just because I think it's like a great way to stay relevant and get more girls in here.
Do you ever think about doing a speaker presentation yourself? I'm sure they'd be keen.
Yeah, I would love to.
Are you big on public speaking? Do you enjoy that?
I definitely did when I was younger. I used to do public speeches all the time. I really liked it. Yeah, I would love to. I kind of have, and I don't know if it's common or not with firefighters, but I have the old imposter syndrome that I don't really have anything good to talk about. I'm sure I do.
Everyone's got an experience. So even at 2 years on, right, there's people that are you're ahead of that they can learn from, right?
Yeah, I honestly would love to. I feel like I often try to be the person that I wish I had going through it. Not that I didn't have anyone, but I had no idea. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who to ask. So I just did it on my own. But like, I would love to help people as much as I can. I get a lot of, even through the guys at work, like, oh, my niece or my neighbor's kid is trying to do it. Do you mind giving me you taking their number? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like, happy to help as much as I can and like kind of guide people in the right direction, especially being like a female in the industry. I've definitely got my own side of things. So yeah, we'll see. I would love to eventually, if I can get something good to share with people, I for sure will.
Well, maybe this is a start for you.
Yeah, and I honestly love this platform. I think it's a huge opportunity. Again, like I didn't even think to look, but like it's such a easy way to have people get a better understanding of what they're getting into, what the job is, how to get into it, all those sorts of things, different aspects of the job that you wouldn't think about. This is massive. I love it.
Are there other podcasts you're listening to, fire related or not?
I'm kind of a geek for the Heberman podcast.
Yeah, I saw him speak this year. It was really good.
Where did you see him speak?
Downtown. Well, what used to be the Hummingbird Center. It's Meridian Hall.
That would have been cool to go to. I love that podcast. And then I listen to the Whoop podcast too, because they have some pretty neat people that come on and talk about recovery and sleep and fitness and all that stuff. I'm pretty nerdy about that.
Have you worn a device? Have you worn a Whoop?
I didn't wear one. I wore in rowing. I used to wear Polar like heart rate monitors all the time. I have a Garmin now that I wear all the time.
So it does heart rate variability?
Yeah, which is actually really interesting. Me and a buddy at work were just chatting about that and the importance of that. And I was listening to one of the Whoop podcasts about it and kind of its relevance. And it's pretty new in the field. Well, it's not new, but it's pretty newly actually being recognized, which I think is really neat.
Yeah, it's a huge indicator of your fitness level or your health. Yeah.
And I actually was just chatting with my friend today. I had a pretty rough like knee issue for the past like month and a half. And my HRV suffered for like 4 weeks. And I was like, I am getting enough sleep. I am friggin' training properly. Like, but I had this knee thing that was bothering me for so long. And just this week, it started feeling better. And my HRV went up like 12, 13, 14 points. And I was like, you're friggin' kidding me. Like, this is so neat.
And it's interesting to watch how the shift work affects it, right? And then drinking, like even one drink. Even just one drink before you know, with dinner and you go to bed, like sometimes you have a bad, then your HRV's off, like you're, you know, it does affect your sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually funny because I think I got, the night before shift, I got like 11 and a half hours of just like great sleep, but I had a glass of wine before I went to bed and the HRV was not good the next day.
I'm jealous about both those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's 11 hours sleep feel like? Yeah.
Yeah. It's rare.
I'll put three nights together and maybe I'll get 11.
You'll get it by the end of the week. I know, I keep playing that catch up game too. But I definitely notice it even in my training too. Like why am I so weak today? And then I'm like, oh, I know why.
Yeah. So are there firefighter podcasts that you're listening to? Is that a topic around the department? Are there guys that listen to The Scrap or they're listening to the Journeyman Firefighter? Like which ones?
I don't talk about firefighter podcasts a lot at work. I'm not sure. I definitely don't listen to a ton. I listen to the multiple calls. We do have some guys at our work that have one. It's called Life Beyond the Sirens. That started with one of the guys I got hired on with and a few other buddies on his platoon started it. Now it's run by a couple other people. Another guy that I got hired on with runs it. So I listen to that one every once in a while. I have like a pretty ADHD brain, and if it's not short and sweet, I just start thinking about other things. And then next thing you know, I'm listening to music. So I have a hard time staying on topic with that.
Well, you should listen to the Grabs podcast then, because they're like 15 minutes to a half an hour and they're all real life rescues and
Grabs. Yeah. Okay. I'll look that up. That's cool.
I pump that one up as often as possible. Every single firefighter should listen to it. So
Grabs. Oh, and it's just about stories. That's neat. Yeah. That'd be cool to listen to.
Do you have any career aspirations like captain? Are you thinking farther ahead or is that not even on your radar yet?
It was pretty funny the other day they were talking about it. Just we got another probie underneath me now and they're like, God, like, don't worry, you don't even have to think about that kind of stuff yet. And fell into them being like, oh, Lexi, you'll be a captain. You don't like listening too much. I was like, I like listening. I just have a lot of ideas. So I don't have like immediate desire to be captain. I love sitting in the back. I love following orders for now. I definitely can offer something when the time comes and when my experience allows it to be beneficial to the city to be a captain. And that would be the only reason why I would want to do it. Not for the title or anything. It would just be that I have genuine ability to offer something good for that position and for the people below me and above me and all of that. That would be, I don't have my eye on the chief job or anything right now. I just started driving in Burlington. That's enough on my plate. So I'm definitely busy as it is.
Anything else you want to cover before we wrap it up? Any words of advice for other people trying to get on?
Definitely. I remember when I got on, everybody tells you that it's the best job in the world. And I got on and I was like, this job fucking sucks because it's hard. It's different. There's no other job like it. I don't think that you can compare firefighting to anything. My honest advice is to just stick it out, because it actually is the best job in the world. Through the highs and the lows of the job, especially being a female in the job, comes with its own challenges. It is truly the best job I've ever had, and I definitely will never, ever leave it. But it sucks when you're new. There's a lot to learn, and there's a lot of times where you feel like you're the stupidest person alive, because firefighters have to know everything, or at least a little bit about everything. And like I said before, like, I still struggle with imposter syndrome at work a lot of the time, because we're faced with things you've no idea, right? And like, your crew knows things because they've been on longer than you, just, and that's just facts, right? And if you come on and you're expecting to be good right away, or you're like, okay, like, I know what I'm doing, you won't. And getting comfortable with that, and just like pushing through those shitty times where you feel like you have no idea what you're doing, this job is so hard, it's nothing like I've ever done, it is the best job in the world. And like, I think that's important. Nobody told me that. Nobody told me that the first little bit is going to be really, really hard.
Yeah, you're always chasing competency.
And you're always learning. It's like your brain is exploding every single day with training and calls and, you know, like,
if you allow it to.
Yes. If you allow it. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe
you can just shut it off. That's a choice too.
Yeah. Don't do that.
I wouldn't recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure some people think I sound crazy right now. This job is so easy, but that's just it. Push like that it's hard, but it is the best job in the world. And if you care, it's going to be harder, but it's the best job in the world.
The harder you work at it, the more it gives back.
The harder you try and the better you are, the harder it gets. Pressure is a privilege. So
there you go.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome. I really appreciate it.
Wicked. No, I'm glad we had a chance to connect.
Yeah, me too.